You go on there in the winter time and you'll the hard weather, and you'll see them going like this, and they're picking the bluebell roots up and eating them. They live where another would die.
And have they been evolved just in the Isle of Man?
Well, no, they're all over the country now. They're across in the museums and then there's exotic breeds and all that, all over there now.
Mm.
Jackie B sends them away.
But 50 years ago, there weren't all that number of them about, were
there? They were nearly extinct, and Walter knows better than me about that. They were nearly extinct. And then they imported the soy. Mm. They have two horns, there, but the wool is much... It's not the same, but it's grey, more grey, isn't it? Mm. And they imported them and crossed them. And they've got them... stiffened up a bit now. There's plenty. Oh, there's lots of them in Ireland now. It's over 100 on the calf.
And you're in charge of those sheep?
Well, I go on to clip, shear them and dip them and dehorn them and all the castrate them, all the necessary things, you know, with the help of others.
And is the wool quite good wool?
Yes, if you get the real, but the soy wool, it's grey, you see the grey in it, it's coarser wool, but the real nice wool is, it's good wool. They've got that Greber now, the woolen mills, they've got a flock there, a small flock. Well, there's quite a few flocks on the island
and
now.
And do they breed as well as...
Oh, yes, they'll breed just as well. There were often three of them out there, but they not this last year or two. But 3 years ago, there was, I don't know how many were triplets. And pairs are coming, of course. But one is plenty for them on there.
Yeah. Well, how does a sheep cope with three lambs then?
Well, they reared them.
That's an.
And I had six triplets myself, and they reared them without any milk. But you're fortunate if you get a good sheep. Plenty of milk, but they're tough, you know. Good milk at the Larktons.
What kind of stock in numbers? What numbers of stock will the calf of man rear? How many will they maintain, do you reckon?
Well, the size of it should they should maintain about 200 or 300, but there's a lot of it gone back. I used to go on, perhaps in the winter time, to kill a pig for them for the winter and that sort of thing. They'd be self-supported. Own butter, eggs, bacon, kill a lamb if they wanted.
And would they fish?
Yes, oh, I fish, yes. Good place for fish around there.
And how did you get across?
The boat goes from here. The chap that looks after the lightkeepers, he goes on. And if he hasn't got to go, if I've got to go, he takes me over.
Oh, so you go from
Portsmouth out to Port...
You wouldn't just get a boat from Craigneish then?
No, no. They used to have boat down to Sound, but then you couldn't keep a boat down there now. It vandals and putting the foot through the boat and all, that's been known too.
Oh, you're subject to that kind of trouble now, aren't you?
Well, not very much, but odd ones. You can know who's somebody's envious of the boat being there. Mm. And the boat that used to be there, I have always not been one down there for 30 or 40 years. But they've saved lots of lives down there. It was left down there, and the fellows in trouble, they'd go down from the village of Craigneish and go out, and because they were nearly all seamen, sailors, and they knew the Sound from A to Z.
From your point of view, what is special about the village of Craigneish?
Well, one thing is special about it now is the museum have done something that is the best thing they ever did.
Oh, so you feel proud that that Craigneish has been preserved?
Yes, because it's nice to get up at Cronker. Were you up there today?
No.
Up at Cronker Watch there and looking down at the village, compact little place. And, well, I remember a lot of houses, slate houses. That were thatch houses. I remember Ellis's and Meter's. Oh, a whole lot of them. Not a whole lot of them. Three or four of them anyway. And who else? Oh, there's Ginny Clark. Oh, it's just gone now, isn't it?
Your memory goes back to a time when these museum houses were residential houses.
Oh, yes. I bought cattle in some of the houses that were thatched there, James Cairns, when I was butchering. And the horses were in the stable in a thatched place. And oh, I remember all the old timers up there. I can go back over 70-odd years and remember people. I knew an old fellow they called Bill Tim Crebin. He was a great uncle to my aunt, Bill Tim, Bill Crebin. And he came down to Glen Down to live 1912, I think. And he was there 1914 and 15. I was 4 years when he died. Died in the Howe Chapel, 96. And I've heard them saying that I don't know how far it's true. I've heard them saying he walked to Ramsey and bought a little pig and walked home with him the one day. But I do know for a fact he went out to Spanish Head and bought a horse grubber, single grubber, and put it on his shoulder and carried it into Craignish. And he'd go out in the morning at 7 o'clock and come home about 6 or 7 at night and without any meal in the daytime. And he lived till he was 96.
This must have been a very compact sort of community at this end of the island.
Oh, yes, yes. Everybody knew everybody on the south here, and you could go in every house, and all these fishermen would be away in the summertime, and then they'd be, if the mill was about, you'd have to go around and ask them to see where they come to thresh. But they could adapt themselves to anything.
So the fishermen would turn into farmers?
Well, a lot of them were used to farm. They'd do anything in the winter time. You see, draining, fencing, ditching and draining and all sorts.
You seem to take, not just you, but Manx people seem to take a great pride in knowing all your neighbours and their relationships and cousinships and all that kind of thing.
Yes, well,
Seems to come to you very easily.
Yes, well, now I'm one of the oldest fellas about that knows anything about those old people. Mm. My sister, Calby, well, she's 70. She's 5 years younger than I am, 74 or 5. And if she wants to know anybody, and even ones over there, if they want to know anybody, they ring me up to see who was their father and who was their mother and who were they married and one thing and another.
And can you still remember these intricate relationships?
Yes, I can go back a long way. And I was one of these fellas. I would be sitting listening to the old people talking. I remember the two old fellas up here, John, Nick, they were calling him, and Ned Nelson, little, he was a relative of my father's. And there was a hedge here and a road in that way and another, road in here. And they were sitting back to back talking Manx, not that I knew what they were saying at all, talking Manx. And that's a long time ago.
Now, you say they were talking Manx and you couldn't understand it. How could that be?
Well, we went encouraged to talk Manx in our younger days. They thought it was too degrading because there's so many of the men going away to work, I suppose, skippers and boats and one thing or another. There's only the likes of Walter getting in with all these old people like Huey Clark and all those.
But they were your age, were they? Or were they older men?
Older than mine, them flesh, yes. Oh, yes, Ned Nelson's my father's cousin, and John Nick was Kermit, his name was. They all had names, Joe Bill Joe, John Bill Joe, Willie Bill Harry.
This was because they had the same surname anyways.
Well, you see, John Bill Joe, Joe was the son of John, Joe was the son of Bill, and Bill was the son of John Bill Joe, and Willie Bill Harry.
And was it always through their fathers?
Father, yes, fathers.
Not through the mothers?
No, but they were, some of them had been going through the mothers too. Betsy Tom Jimmy.
And so how, yes, but you see, Betsy Tom Jimmy is a girl.
Yeah.
And you're talking about her through her father and her grandfather.
I well, perhaps the father, she had no father. That was the case too.
So was there ever Jimmy Betsy Joe?
Oh, well, no, I didn't know Jimmy Betsy Joe at all. I'm just speaking of, I didn't know them all, but you knew Charlie Breggett, you didn't know him.
No.
You knew Billy Breggett, no.
Dougie.
I knew Billy Farragher, Billy Breggett, Billy Lass, the star in the Oil of the New Suit. I've heard them saying.
Tell us that tale.
I can tell you what. I know. Don't tell this.
Go on, tell us.
Not do to tell that at all. I tell. Billy Red, Charlie Breggett was a character, wasn't he?
And what was the story of the new suit then?
I know who you're going to tell this to.
Oh, go on, you tell us it. We won't tell his father or anything like that.
Oh, well, that's what I've heard. My aunt told me that. But
yes. And what was the tale then?
What's his name? It's Dougie's dead, isn't he? Yeah. You called Dougie Breggett, didn't you?
That's right. Mm.
Charlie the Liar, isn't it?
Aye.
Andrew Kinley says they stole Johnny Anderson's pudding. And they were red and turnips, Andrew used to say. They were a fine family, though, fine family of men.
When you're saying somebody was red on turnips, does that really mean that they lived in great poverty?
Well, they wouldn't have very much. They'd have turnips and potatoes and fish, and they were only Joe Bill Joe that I've heard them saying was John Gowan. You knew John Gowan up there. John Gowan said he died in 1878 or 1888, and he left 75,000 a few years in fishing. He was supplying them with this, that, and nets, everything else. He had the full pull on it. That's a lot of money,
Walter.
Then. Eh?
You're grunting, Walter.
Yeah, it's going to come through on the text.
It's all coming through, is you're grunting, yeah. Oh, shit.
Aye.
It's all right. And when some of these men died, were quite a few of them worth a lot of money?
No, there was none of them very... When I was with the John, as I went... You know Henry Kenyuk, don't you? Well, Henry Kenyuk's great uncle. I was carried the coffin with another apprentice from down here, up through here, fisted up to Craignish, to the house where, you know, the house, what's her name, Olive Give to the Trust, where Parcelwaite's to that Johnny Kegan, his name was, and... put him in the calf, and of course the two boss and one of the joiners was come walking behind, and us two carrying that calf up there. And it turned out to be there was about £600 in sovereigns in the clock.
That would be a good deal of
money. Oh, yes. Oh, there was some of them we could save money all right, but others couldn't. It was rum, drink too much rum and one thing or another.
Did you say that people were buried on the calf?
There's supposed to be a child buried on there, isn't there?
But not normally, you wouldn't normally.
No, no, there's been children born. The Garretts were two, one or two they had born on the calf.
Two, I think.
Yes. No, it'd be a child that died there and would be buried.
Mm. Well... When you were just a youngster, at the time that you were just sort of leaving school, what sort of population was there around here?
About 11 or 1,200.
And that would cover from here to where?
Ports of Mary, well, round about here. In the voting part, this would be the parish up here that time. Oh, just down the neighbour, the Lime Street and round, and up to Ballacraig and to the Four Roads. And there's something similar in Podeyrin, in about 1,200.
So the total population was not very great.
No, it wasn't, because it was only chiefly, there were an awful lot of shops in Port St Mary that time. How they making their living, I don't know. But even in my time, there was three or four butchers. Now there's only two now.
Because you were producing all your
food. Your own, yes, all our own stuff.
And apart from meat, was much taken away? I mean,
nothing much exported. Then the dealers would come over and buy old cows and things like that, things he didn't want here, bulls and that sort of thing.
Yes, I like to hear you say that you can feel at ease with farming communities in other outside the island.
They were they couldn't say a wrong word for the Cumberland people or the Westmorland either.
Do you remember any time when there was a good deal of direct connection from the Isle of Man to Whitehaven?
Oh, the boats, yes, and Manx people getting married from Craignish, ones married and living in Whitehaven. Oh, and all these ports, of course.
And when you brought your cattle back, did you bring them from Whitehaven?
Oh, well, sheep I was buying back, yes. Yeah, no, up from Liverpool, they were taking them down to Liverpool.
Yes. Gosh, that would be quite expensive transport.
It wasn't at one time, but it got to be that expensive that when the dockers had ruined that, because instead of, if I'd buy one ram or two rams, one man could have done put them on the boat. But the whole gang had to come out and got, you couldn't afford it.
So that broke the...
I haven't had any for a few years now, Cross.
Mm-hmm. And was that to bring in outside breeds to strengthen your...
Yes. Breeds at that time, I'm going back for 40 years bringing them in. That particular... In fact, I was the only one around about this neighbourhood that had this particular breed, and it got to be then they all went in for them.
So you've had a very varied farming life, bringing in new things?
Yes, different breeds of sheep, Scotch sheep and Hexham, Leicesters. And...
You were telling me earlier, actually, before Will came in, about your very earliest days and the sort of things that you were doing immediately after you left school. You had quite a varied career in those days.
Yes.
Tell us again.
I was brought home, I was only 14, I was looking after 40 cattle, feeding them and docking the timbers for them, carting them in with one horse and a cart and such like, and milking and doing me share with the rest. And then when I got to about 15 or 16, I was after a pair of horses, getting 10 bob a week. And I forgot to tell you the money. Then I was put to the joiners, and I was getting 5 bob a week. There, 2.5 years, and I was working at Bella Woods. You know where Bella Woods is? Cycling there and back for 6 months for 5 bob a week, wind, rain, hail, or snow. So that's about 18 miles a day.
So you were an apprentice joiner?
Yes, yes.
And you qualified, did you?
No, I was taken from it. They didn't care, but then taken from it to go home when my brother went to hospital to follow the horses. And then I never got back, and then I went butchering.
So how old were you when you started being a butcher?
21.
And
had a butcher's business, pardon?
How long did that last?
20-odd years. And I had a farm as well. I had the farm of Gibbs, you know. Have you been to the Grove?
No, we haven't, no.
Will Gibb, he's the brother to the two Groves sisters. I had that place. I've still got it. I've had that over 50 years. And Mansell bought it. And I've still got it. So I've had that.
This is the motor racing manager?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Aye, yes. Mm. And I sold the field to him, and he couldn't get the right road up, and he bought this field of me and built the house. The house was built up on top, and he put the road up through my field now. And give £250 for it in 1940 something. They get £15,000 for it.
We won't put that on. Now, is there anything else that
tell
you think
tell us something when you were butchering, and all that time, anything?
Oh well,
stay in the mind.
So the beast wasn't actually swimming; you were towing.
He would swim for about 100 yards and make a splutter, and then he'd lie on the side
and float, and you
yes,
were towing.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Ah. I mind you, those cattle were 1,000 with the open water. There were two big cattle. Mitchell's, I bought them a Mitchell.
That was something, wasn't it? Yeah. Any other stories like those about taking your cattle off some distance and having bits of trouble with them?
Oh, well, yes, plenty of. Well, I got one up at Bellicle Ferrick one time, and I came down with it, and she was got in a field, and I got in the field after, and she got after me, and I had to go and get another man to give me a hand.
Did you ever have any trouble with bulls?
Yeah, I was just say I bought a bull one time, Jim Cool up Bradda, and he was shut in all the summer because he was chasing his sister, and he had shut him in, and I bought him, and I went up at 2 o'clock in the morning. You didn't like anybody to see you with a bull those days. The customers wouldn't like the bull. Tough flesh. But anyway, that fellow, there's a moonlight night, and Jim Cool would be in top form at 2 o'clock in the morning. He went up at 11, he won me up in the daytime. Anyway, there was a big box, so big, about 6'4" outside the door, and he made one race at the box. He knocked it in thousands of pieces. And anyway, we got down and we come along Park Road there, and Doris met the old lady. She couldn't sleep, and she was sitting on the chair all night. And she said to Doris, "I saw Alec going past this morning at 2 or 3 o'clock with a cow on a rope. Didn't know it was a bull at all."
And you slaughtered him?
Yes, yes.
And sold the meat?
Yes, and it was about some of the best meat ever I tasted, because he was getting fed on milk and Indian meal.
So, in fact, it was a good meat?
Yes, wow. Yes, but you'll get some old tajas when they're 1,700, 1,800 weight, tough and...
Ah, so they prefer not to know?
Yes, yes.
I see, yeah.
Lovely, lovely. Just one final thing. I don't know whether we've actually had enough, anything really substantial about what qualities would you think went to make up a Manxman? Yeah, you know what?
Yes. Well, I can tell. Some of them were hard work, and then some of them weren't. Just shut that off for a minute.
You telling us what you think is a Manxman, that's important.
Yeah, you say there's not very many of them around anymore, so...
What's special?
I knew one man that gave up work when he was 30 years of age, when he had a bad heart, and I remember him dying 96. So ask yourself the question.
So you reckon that's what makes a Manxman?
No, not all Manxmen. Some very thrifty Manxmen and good Manxmen. And good-natured, good help one, help the other.
That's fair enough. That is fair.